My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Seeley Pines, the director of Design Week Portland, and Kate Bingaman-Burt, who is on the board of Design Week Portland and teaches design at Portland State University. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thanks for having us.
So you're here again to talk about Design Week Portland 2016, which
we
is
are.
Bigger and better than ever.
So, always.
Which is quite a good story because you did that. You switched from October to April in order to get bigger. So
we did.
What are the big innovations this year?
The biggest addition this year is the main stage, which is 2 days of centrally programmed talks that kick off the festival. So we're really excited to have 24 interesting people who are going to be speaking about design from all different disciplines and practices.
Mm-hmm. This is Revolution Hall on
the
east side?
Yeah, so April 15th and 16th at Revolution Hall. We're going to have 12 core talks and 12 other shorter talks that are introducing them. And it's going to be a really interesting look at some of the issues that are most affecting Portland and that the design community at large is most thinking about.
Mm-hmm. When you say the design community, are we talking architects and graphic designers?
Yes.
Or is it broader
than
that?
It's design with a capital D.
Absolutely. It really encompasses all aspects of design from graphic design, architecture, interior, fashion, industrial. This is really meant to focus on everybody who's making and thinking about design in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our speakers are going to be coming from Portland, but there's a number of folks that are also coming in from out of town who are either engaged in projects in the Northwest that are of note or that are generally thinking about issues that we're working on here as a community.
Who's the biggest name of all those?
The biggest name, my goodness.
We have so many.
It's funny, when we sat down to think about this component, we asked ourselves, why does the world essentially need another design conference?
Mm-hmm.
There are many great design events around the world, and we felt like what we've been doing really well since the beginning is providing opportunities for people who are coming from different disciplines and practices to cross paths, and so that the content that we're most interested in is not really focused on the process of a particular strain of design, but more some of the bigger picture issues that affect all design practice. And we really focused on thematically on mm-hmm. things that we care about here. So that would be small-scale manufacturing, sustainability, food systems, the relationship between digital and analog, all the things that are kind of coming up here, things like urban planning and all the hand-wringing that we're doing as a city as we grow. We're really interested in looking at those things in particular.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We really focused on what we wanted the content to be and who would be best to speak to that content versus kind of like who are the people we want to hear from and then they can speak about whatever they want to. We kind of worked a little bit backwards mm-hmm. on that. So again, it's going to be all the talks are really going to kind of connect quite well with one another.
Yeah, but to speak to your point directly, we do have a lot of heavy hitters involved. Craig Dykers from Snohetta is coming out, and they're also mounting an exhibition at the Center for Architecture that is the first of its kind in America.
Tell us who Snohetta is.
Snohetta is an international practice of architecture and design, and they deal with fairly large-scale projects. The two projects that they're doing in the region are the Willamette Falls Riverwalk and the James Beard Public Market. But they are also in process on a project with SF MoMA right now and are doing a lot of really high-profile international work. So we're mm-hmm. really curious about, you know, what they see kind of cutting across a lot of their projects and how that localizes to the Northwest and what they're perceiving sort of as outsiders about the region as they do that project.
If somebody doesn't make it to that talk, they can go to the Center for Architecture and see
Snohetta show. The exhibit is opening during Design Week and then it's going to be open for a while. And so you can go to the Center for Architecture in the Pearl and experience an exhibit that sort of tries to recreate some of their studio practice and give you some insight into the way that they work in addition to the product of their work.
Mm-hmm. So they're a big deal because if listeners want to eat at the James Beard Market in a couple of years, they're going to be inside a Snohetta building, which
That's
will
right.
be a tourist attraction in itself.
Yes, yes. It's a world-class project. It's still in a conceptual phase, but yeah, to really get a sense for how they approach their work, it'll be very illuminating to go to that exhibit.
Mm-hmm. And Kate, you're going to be the host on the main stage in Revolution Hall. You'll be up there introducing.
For our 12 speakers, we have 12 people that are introducing the speakers. So they're actually going to be doing the official introducing. I'm probably just going to have anecdotes, talk about our sponsors, give context for Design Week and where we've come and where we're going in the future.
You have a funny setup, though. It's not TED, is it? It's
no.
like intro talk riffing on the talk that's coming next. And is the brief for the person introducing to really just talk about themselves?
No.
It's definitely the people that were chosen to introduce the main stage speakers. There's a good connection between the two. And they're going to talk about the thing that's meaningful to them. And in the same way, also introducing the speaker that's coming up too. So in a way, it's a mini talk / introduction.
Yeah, we're really interested in being in a thematic area. And it sets us up nicely for what we're planning to do after the festival, which is to launch an online journal that pairs a talk from the main stage with a commissioned written piece that's responding to the same theme, having a designer design something around that theme, and pulling in these little snippets, maybe something from the introduction, to create this collection of thoughts around a theme that we care about.
Mm-hmm. Is the idea of the online journal then to preserve the festival in some kind of useful form?
The purpose of the journal is both to keep our audience engaged with some of the questions that we're exploring. So each month we're going to release one of the videos from the main stage along with all of this other content, sort of to give legs to the things that editorially we think are the most important issues and opportunities in design right now.
The talks are over, 2 days?
That's right.
Yeah, and it costs $395 or
That's right.
$295 if you're a student.
Yeah, correct.
And there's also discounts too if there's groups, if there's 5 students that want to get together, it's
yeah.
cheaper, 10, et cetera.
But these are going to be, it's a very professional conference, right?
It is.
People's work are going to be paying or...
Yes. A lot of times people get, you know, professional development funds for these mm-hmm. kinds of things. But we also try to keep it accessible. It's definitely the highest price point that we've ever charged for a centrally produced program. But compared to what many design conferences cost, we've done our best to keep costs down as much as we can so that people who are, say, freelancing and don't have an HR department underwriting their professional development might prioritize coming to this, and it's at least within reach.
Mm-hmm. So just to name some of the names who are speaking, there's a guy called Mike Thelen,
mm-hmm.
who people probably know as the guy who started Feast.
That's
with
right.
someone else.
Yes.
And he's talking about the food. He's talking about agribusiness and how it relates to what?
Well, he's really
culture.
Talking about how the renaissance in food in America is sort of remaking our food system and how chef culture is, in fact, the driving force behind a lot of the changes happening in food systems and creating essentially the consumer that is going to want to buy a product that is part of a more sustainable food system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're way behind Europe in a lot of ways in terms of the way we eat. But when you look at the changes that have happened over the past several decades in consciousness about organic food and what have you, that change is actually pretty real. And in places like Portland, you know, there are food folks who are at the forefront of that and creating a culture around that.
Why is that at a design festival?
Yeah, that's a great question. When we put together the lineup, we realized that what we were talking about essentially were systems because we're an interdisciplinary festival. And when you start bridging disciplines from architecture to graphic design to fashion to what have you, in general, you get very quickly into systems design because collaborating across disciplines gets you very quickly to larger questions and larger problems. And we felt that the first year that we're doing this event, first of all, it would be kind of an omission in Portland, Oregon, not to do something around food. And we started thinking, what do we want to do around food? Because you could arguably have a talk about how chefs are designers, even though they're not trained as designers. They design these experiences, and a lot of the restaurant culture in Portland is being driven by the atmosphere that is created around the food as much as the food, and that was one of the threads that we were kind of exploring. But the more we dug at it and the more we thought about it, the more we realized that what we really want to talk about is food systems. And food systems, you know, there's a lot to say about it from a policy standpoint. There's a lot that you can say about it from any number of angles. But the truth is that having someone like Mike, who is seeing across food systems to the way that it connects to culture and the way that those designed experiences actually fuel systematic changes, is very much a design conversation.
What do you mean they fuel systematic changes?
Well, arguably, chef culture and fine food culture is the PR and marketing arm of a healthy food system. You know, if those folks are sourcing ingredients from the right places and creating an appetite for parts of animals that people aren't purchasing at the store wrapped in plastic, then you're creating a consumer that wants those things, who wants to buy sustainable meats. It essentially is a yin-yang kind of scenario. I think a lot of people argue that chef culture and fine food culture is snobby and exclusive. In some ways, you could argue that that's true because the sheer price point of eating at a fine restaurant clearly makes things that way. But it actually does move the needle in general for the virtuous cycle of having people who want to buy fresh ingredients and can support ways of creating that system that are not agribusiness.
Mm-hmm. My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Celie Pines and Kate Bingham-Burt. Celie and Kate are both on the board, and Celie's director of Design Week Portland, running April 15th through the 23rd. Kate, with all these speakers, some of them are graphic designers,
yes.
Web designers.
Yes.
I'm always amazed how many people now have a say in the way a website looks. I talked to Andy Pressman, who works at a place called Rumors.
Mm-hmm.
And when you mouse over it, all these images pop up and they're kind of all over the place. It's really hard to read. It's kind of like Wired magazine in 1996.
Which was amazing.
He said he's all for a bit of friction because web interfaces have become so slick and simple that people aren't really engaging with the content. And
people aren't thinking about it.
Right. He's based
here. He's
based
here in Portland. He moved here a few years ago. He is originally from Brooklyn. And I've really believe he's one of the smartest people that's kind of working in graphic design today. And I want more people to hear what it is that he is thinking about and doing, because it's always thought provoking, and the way he delivers it is in a very engaging, approachable manner too. He's very entertaining.
He didn't use very many buzzwords. I'll tell you that.
He's hilarious. He's so smart. He's so quick, and he's like perfectly grouchy.
Another person I talked to is Joe Stewart. He works at a company called Work & Co.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a design shop, three of them in New York, one of them here. Picked Portland because he preferred it to other West Coast cities. And he just was giving out tips of, you know, if you're going to start a design company, start thinking about it in your 20s, who you're going to hire, schmooze a bit, and then don't make all these mistakes, you know.
Yeah.
So how sort of business savvy would you say designers are these days?
Well, it's interesting. I think that a lot of people in design, and specifically in Portland, are self-employed, which means that you need to get real good at all of the business and back office things pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you fail. The scale at which an agency like that functions is very different. And the training ground for those guys was at Huge, which is an enormous. One might say huge.
It's called huge. Yeah.
Agency of over 1,000 people worldwide. So a lot of the folks who are partners at Work & Co now were sort of in top brass positions over there, and just became really suffocated by, you know, the requirements of working at that scale and the inability for senior people to actually be doing the work in the trenches. So they split off and started this independent studio. And part of what I was pressing him on when we were talking about what could he talk about on the main stage was, you know, they do great work. And I think his perspective on why they keep getting great projects is because they do great work. But the truth of the matter is that the people who are working there were the pitch team for this enormous agency. And they did a lot of the creative hiring, so they knew a lot of people from that and got really good at identifying talent and implementing talent. And so a lot of the chops that they have as a smaller practice, which is still quite big, I mean, it's 130 people or so across all the offices, they gained by working in this much larger context and seeing all of the components and being involved and in the trenches on all the management side stuff.
Mm-hmm. So he said something like, oh, the guy I hired, he's great, but it took me 3 years. I had to just keep calling him every 3 months until eventually he was ready.
Yeah. And, you know, if you know the right people, it's one of those things where you have to be in a position where you're already doing amazing work with amazing people on board already to continue attracting amazing people to work with you. So it's very much, you know, a feedback loop of talent.
So you're having a party where people can schmooze.
We are. We do every year. And this year, what's cool is that the opening party, which is confusing people because it comes after the main stage, but the opening party traditionally kicks off all of the independent events. And so this year it acts as the bridge between the main stage and the independent festival.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So anyone who's attended the main stage has a ticket in the form of their pass to come. But if you are not attending the main stage, you can just pay $10. And on April 16th in the evening, you can come to Washington High School where Revolution Hall is. And we're doing an entire building takeover for the party, and there will be over 12 spaces that are opening up for activations, each one of them unique. So these are
what's an activation?
Well, basically each of the creative workspaces in the building that's participating has come up with a concept for their space, that's an experience or that's some kind of fun thing that you can come into their space and do, and each one is different. So there will be, you know, these hallways connecting all of these interesting little pockets of engagement and design.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't been in Revolution Hall, it's an old high school, so it has the potential to feel like kind of a high school dance if you want to feel like that.
There are still lockers lining the hallways.
Right.
Yeah, it's a really cool space.
Washington High School is subdivided into little business spaces.
Yeah.
Some of them are creative.
And there's going to be several different spaces where there's going to be different things for the party goers to participate in as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a good time. It's always a lot of people, and it's always a great way to kick off the week with all of the events and open houses that are going to be happening too.
So, you know, you can order Taco Bell now in Slack.
What?
You can type in what you want. You still got to get someone to go and get it, but it'll take your order in Slack. So as people are sitting around, you know, instant messaging, kind of hiding from each other, what's the value of like face-to-face meeting?
Well, it becomes all the more valuable, right? Because I mean, I think that the interest in events generally has seen an upsurge in the past 10 years because of the isolation of social media and online living. You know, people are totally just aching for face-to-face time and for spaces where there are like-minded people that they might be able to meet that they don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just as much as, you know, an opportunity to hang out with people that they do know already. So one of the cool things in the festival is just that people tend to be pretty open and approachable. you know, we see people with very kind of just a friendly vibe talking to each other, even if they don't know each other. Like, there's an excuse, basically, to meet.
That's a lot like Pica, right? The idea was that you could meet the artists at night.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of Pica, they used to do their works programming at Washington High School before it was renovated. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a nice history in that building.
So then the other bits of the festival are the headquarters in Paine Courthouse Square, and there are open houses, and then there are some other events. So just quickly, what is headquarters?
So headquarters, the first year in 2012 when we did the festival, we had this type truck, which was like a food truck, except there was printing in it, that we would move from place to place to hand out programs.
We had a roving headquarters.
It was a roving headquarters, and we would try to position the truck near where some of the events were happening, and it was this very kind of guerrilla effort. Every year, we started becoming more serious about headquarters and actually having a place, a central address that attendees could come, not only just to pick up programs, but maybe to meet people and have someone to guide them through the programming, since there's so many things going on. Last time we did a whole week-long installation on Pioneer Courthouse Square, and it was really successful for public engagement and for having a place that if you're between events or something, you can come and hang out with, you know, people who are just waiting for the next thing to start, or, you know, meet people who are working there, or even just kind of read some stuff that we had there. This year, we're trying to engage the public in conversations about the future of the city. I mean, every conversation that I overhear on the street right now is hand-wringing over what's happening in Portland, and we're really at an inflection point in this city, and everybody
What's happening? You mean the cost of housing going up?
The cost of housing, the influx of people, the sudden traffic everywhere, all of the standard of living issues that are suddenly becoming very apparent, and where, you know, people are seeing these enormous buildings going up in the middle of town, and everyone's nervous. Some people are excited about it. Some people are angry about it. But everybody has an opinion about it and something to say about it. And so we felt like this year we really had to engage with that head on. So what we're going to be doing is plotting Portland's neighborhoods on the square. And we're going to be asking people when they come into our geodesic dome that we're installing on the square to pick from one of the issues that they think is most affecting Portland, from housing to transportation to employment to education to equity. And then they can take a tag and write what they want to see more of and what they want to do about it. And they can then localize it to a neighborhood that they care about. So, you know, if I choose education as an issue and I say, you know, I want to see more teachers, so I will pay more taxes. And I care about Hollywood because that's where I live and that's where my kid is going to school. You know, it can be someone weighing in on transportation who lives in a neighborhood that's far out and needs to commute into the office downtown every day and is having a longer and longer and longer commute. So we're hoping to capture a lot of voices around, like, what are people caring about right now and what do they want to see happen in the future?
And what are you going to do with all this information?
We're going to be scanning everything as it's filled out. We'll be taking a tally that's quantitative about the issues that people are most talking about. And then we'll have the qualitative piece, which is what they're saying, that we're scanning and we're going to be posting. And we'll just aggregate all this stuff and create a report out of it. One of my biggest fears is honestly that it'll be this, oh, the naive design community thinks that they can do a better job at outreach and community engagement than the city. What we're trying to do is create a positive and constructive conversation that just adds to what is already underway in the city, and we are going to be sharing those findings. It is another way to give citizens a voice so that it's clear what everybody is concerned about and what they're hoping for and how they want to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can see how naive the design community is by going on the open house tour, right? You can go into these people's offices, meet them, look at their desks, talk to them, see their work.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite parts of Design Week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 4 to 7.
It's April
19th through the 22nd. It's open by each day is a different quadrant of the city. And if you go to designweekportland.com, you can see all of the open houses that are scheduled to be participating. So you can kind of plan your attack.
So do you just go around in a group, or is there a shuttle bus?
It is so independent. You can, you know, I would grab a friend, or you can go by yourself, mm-hmm. and you can just pick the places that you want to explore. You can read the descriptions on the website. You can kind of figure out, like, oh, I've always wondered what they do, or I've always wondered, you know, what this office looks like. And then you can just enter and have a conversation and see what's up. And maybe some of the open houses might have different programming that they have planned specifically for Design Week. So it's definitely really fun. That time goes very fast. So I would absolutely recommend having a plan of attack before you kind of dive into it. But it's really accessible, it's free, and it's a very low pressure way to kind of get out and explore the city and see what the design studios are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on Tuesday, it's north and northeast, and on Wednesday, it's southeast, and on Thursday, it's northwest, and on Friday, it's southwest. And you can basically treat it much like open studios, mm-hmm. where
the art thing,
where you're basically going in there to see what goes on behind closed doors and have conversations with people about their work. And you know, we find that it's a great opportunity for people who are new to the city to get familiar with the city, whether they're coming specifically for the festival or if they've recently moved. It's also great for people who've been here for a long time, but have felt like, you know, they don't have access to some of these spaces where the creative work is getting done, to just learn more about it and see, you know, who's behind it, ask questions.
Mm-hmm. So we got 1 minute. You do, Celia, you do creative
mornings
which is like little talks, but early mm-hmm. in the morning, mm-hmm. creative people talking. And you got a big one on Friday 22nd at the Armory.
That's right. There are a lot of events that are going on during Design Week. Some of them are small workshops and things and might sell out. And then there are some events that are larger that can accommodate a lot more people. And Creative Mornings is one of them. We're going to be at the Armory on Friday, April 22nd. And our speaker is Kevin Cavanaugh from Guerrilla Development. And he is so interesting because I think he kind of acknowledges his role in gentrifying Portland. He's been involved in a lot of projects that people would recognize, like the Rocket Building or the Ocean, that nice little food collection of businesses off of Sandy in the 20s, or the Zipper Building, which if you're driving down Sandy, the first time I saw it, I was like, I'm going to get in an accident because I'm just, I can't stop looking at this building. And now he's working on one of the projects at the Burnside Bridgehead, and he's experimenting with a lot of interesting things. He's trying to do crowdfunding for some of his projects so that essentially people who generally don't have access to equity in real estate development will. And he's also developing some affordable housing with some of his projects to really target professions of people that are contributing to the community that are getting shut out of certain rents. So, you know, social workers, teachers. So he's really interesting and is going to be, you know, talking about the arc of his projects. And the theme for Creative Mornings this month is risk. And he's taken quite a bit of it and has, I think, taken a bath a few times because of it. He's going to be talking about that kind of work and also trying to think creatively about ways to do it in new models.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Celie Pines, the director of Design Week Portland, and Kate Bingaman-Burt, who's on the board of Design Week Portland and teaches graphic design at Portland State University. Thanks for coming in to KBOO.
Thank you for having us. Andy Warhol looks at screen.